Wise Awards are back for 2024 and early bird entries are still open. These awards recognise the best use of digital media, marketing and commerce, and they also celebrate innovation and expertise right across the digital marketing industry. There are more categories than ever before to enter, so visit exchangewire.com/events to find out more.
The MarTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome back to the MarTech Podcast. I'm your host today, Amy Newell-Terrine, and I'm pleased to be joined by our research lead, Matt Broughton. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, Amy. Good to be here.
Great to have you here as always. And our special guest today, Jamie Vaughan, who is Commercial Director at Signify. Welcome, Jamie. Glad you could join us today.
Yeah, thanks lots for having me. Cheers.
Yeah, great to have you here. So our stories today cover Google's monopolization of the search market, Amazon's recent sales figures falling short of targets, plus Snapchat's improved ad revenue performance and its success in adding more daily users as well as subscribers. So let's get into the stories. So to start with, some huge industry news about Google, which we've been getting a lot of lately. So bringing its antitrust case with the DOJ to close, the judge ruled that Google has monopolized search. Judge Amit Mehta wrote, after having carefully considered and weighed the witness testimony and evidence, the court reaches the following conclusion. Google is a monopolist and has acted as one to maintain its monopoly. So I'll come to you first, Jamie. What do you think could this lead to the breakup of Google?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's big news for sure. And I think when I was reading the news, I think it's probably gone one step further than a monopolist. It's an eponym like a Hoover or getting an Uber these days. And I think that's normally quite a good sign of, total market dominance. I think I sort of had my mind cast back to, I think I must have been about 3 or 4 at the news when it first actually came out, but having read about it a while back when Internet Explorer was launched by Microsoft, and there was a similar case where the DOJ did try and break up Microsoft and Internet Explorer. So I think there is a chance that there is sort of more kind of stringent action taken. But I think it's an issue that's sort of throughout the entire hyperscaler industry. I think Microsoft, Amazon, and all of those sorts of companies have similar problems. So it will be quite a hard one to enforce on just one of them, really.
Yeah, it's very true. It's an industry-wide problem, really. Yeah.
Thanks to me.
Yeah. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, just to be able to say that sentence, Google is a monopolist, it's huge. Obviously, you know, there's no need to put any fluffy language, Google's allegedly a monopolist, or Google seems to be acting. No, Google is a monopolist. And just that sentence alone has huge, huge implications for the industry as a whole. Given how much Judge Mehta's ruling centered around the default distribution agreements, such as the main one with Apple, these will be targeted first, and it's likely going to face heavy fines in terms of how it's priced its search ad auctions. Google, I think, here will pay the government a kind of non-liability fee, which you can do under the Antitrust Act, and that will basically mean it will avoid being sued by advertisers, which it undoubtedly would, given that it has been ruled to be acting as a monopolist in terms of those search ad auctions. I'm less certain in terms of a breakup. The ruling acknowledges that Google has built up the most effective search platform by its own right, and that differs from the upcoming lawsuit in terms of its ad tech stack, which was rolled up through a series of acquisitions. And unspinning Google Search from Chrome, that seems a bit of a stretch, given that you can already, going through your settings, you can change from Google Search to the likes of Bing, Yahoo, DuckDuckGo, and Ecosia within the Chrome browser, similar to how Microsoft defaults to Bing within its Edge browser. So I can't really see them breaking that up. And obviously you've got the backdrop of a upcoming US presidential election, and both sides are being lobbied pretty hard by businesses to replace the current FTC chair Lina Khan with a more light touch commissioner, which I feel would be such a backward step. Big tech companies in particular have had free rein for far too long to act as these monopolies. But yeah, ultimately no US company has been forced to break up since AT&T in the early 1980s. But yeah, it's definitely a huge antitrust ruling.
Yeah, it is a huge one. It's all looking a bit uncertain at the moment, seeing, yeah. So now coming back to you, Jamie, what implications does this have for big tech and independent ad tech as well?
Yeah, I think to my earlier point, I think this is just sort of an epidemic throughout the big tech industry. And I think so much of the market growth that we've seen over the last year is just driven by five or six companies. So it's a very, very scary thing to start messing around with too much. And I think pairing that with bundling, which we've seen a huge amount of from Microsoft, especially, as well as Google and Adobe and various others, I think there is an inevitable sort of point at which that legislation needs to keep up with these hyperscalers that are relatively new still. It's, you know, if we think back to Facebook only being, you know, in the last sort of 15, 20 years being existent, and yet they're now one of the sort of few biggest companies in the world, it's just very hard for a relatively slow moving thing like the government throughout the world to keep up with. And I think the point Matt made around lobbying is one that it sort of cued me to have a look into, is the level of lobbying has gone up fourfold in 10 years. And it just sort of points very clearly to the fact that they're mad on trying to entrench themselves within this legislation. And I think the inevitable outcome is that it's just harder for, if we use Teams as an example that we will probably use on a daily basis, it just makes it that bit harder for the likes of Zoom or Slack or sort of new scalers to compete. I think from the ad tech standpoint, I think inevitably there are other options. And I think if the government are coming down, whether that's the DOJ or the EU, which we've seen do with other hyperscalers, there are other options out there. And the fines they're talking about are potentially 10% of revenue I've read for the EU. So it's not an immaterial amount of money that they're talking about. And I think that will give some sort of penalization to the hyperscalers that will give potentially some opportunity back to the scalers in the ad tech space.
Yeah, those are some good points. And yeah, like you said, we could see kind of a huge knock-on effect there. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I think in terms of the big tech side of things, I think Bing is obviously going to be the big winner here, given that it's already got that momentum in terms of AI-powered search. And though Apple has already built capabilities for indexing, I can't really see it building a traditional search engine. It does have a partnership with OpenAI, so I can see them launching a more kind of AI-focused engine rather than that traditional indexing with a bit of AI capabilities on top of that. But there's such huge implications, as Jamie alluded to, in terms of the ad tech side of things. Obviously, we do have that major upcoming case led by the DOJ starting in September. And that, to me, as I said earlier, that I think will be more likely to lead to some form of divestiture. Separate cases, obviously, but precedent is so, so powerful in terms of the legal world. And Meta obviously ruled that Google is operating a monopoly in the general search text ads market, which resulted in inflated prices for advertisers. And it also simultaneously degraded the quality of adverts while capping the ad revenues of rivals. And there's a sentence or two from the ruling, which I think is so, you know, indicative of what may happen in the future case. And that's that Google controls key inputs to the auctions that influence the ultimate price that advertisers pay. That Google makes changes to its ads auctions without considering its rivals' prices is something that only a firm with monopoly power is able to do. Google, in fact, has profitably raised prices substantially above the competitive level. That makes the existence of monopoly power clear. And I think in terms of how it's rolled up its ad stack over the years, it's a really strong analogy to that situation. So I can't, you know, it's very suggestive that, you know, the upcoming case may have really, really strong implications for Google and its network business.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It will be exciting to see how that case, how it turns out and what ends up happening to Google following that. That will be some big news for the industry, I guess, however it goes. Yeah, let's move on to our next story then. So now on to Amazon. Their sales fell short of analyst forecasts. The revenue miss was reportedly a result of consumers seeking out cheaper products, resulting in a lower average selling price. However, Amazon's cloud business surpassed market estimates with a 19% increase in sales, while its advertising revenue grew another 20% to $12.8 billion. So, Jamie, I'll come to you first again. What does this tell us about the general consumer mindset at the moment?
Yeah, I think it was amusing that they didn't include the word Temu in this article, but they may as well have done. I think cost of living has probably appeared in every single podcast that has been released in the last however many months. So I think that's an inevitable place to start. I think Amazon is relatively premium in their space, because they major on delivery and trustworthiness and all of those sorts of things that premiumize the service. And the likes of Temu are not as strong on delivery. It's probably four times as long averagely to get something off Temu than it is Amazon, but they really major on price. And I think if we sort of get into the minds of the consumer today, I think people are generally speaking on the sort of scale that we're talking about, which is many tens of billions. The average consumer is looking for lower average, averagely priced items. I think the other thing that I'd say, though, is that as much as it was a miss, it was still fairly substantial growth. And if they're blaming it solely on lower average order value on Amazon, I don't think that's sort of, a major issue. But as I say, I think Temu is the major omission from the news.
Yeah, great point. I mean, the cost of living is a hugely important factor in all of this. Matt, how could advertisers be affected by this?
Yeah, so I think it's, I completely echo Jamie's point in terms of the likes of Temu and Shein has really been hitting Amazon. But I think that's also been amplified as a result of quite poor business practices from Amazon. It's the quality of merchandise on Prime has generally been falling as it's opened up to more and more third-party sellers in response to, these new players coming onto the market. But equally, it's been maintaining that higher price point, which obviously, in that cost of living crisis, the consumers are not going to go for that higher price point for lower quality goods. And in their earnings call, they're blaming everything from the consumer, which, given wage growth is still quite sluggish, is quite unfair. And quite hilariously, in terms of its upcoming forecast, Amazon said they cannot effectively forecast for next quarter due to the Olympics and the shooting of Donald Trump, which, when they're kind of drawing straws out of a hat in terms of what can we blame next in terms of our forecast, it kind of harkens back a couple of years ago to when every single business of every single type and vertical was blaming the war in Ukraine on their poor results. It doesn't necessarily add up. There has been a landmark ruling in the last week or so that Amazon has been found legally responsible for the goods sold by third parties. So it'll probably, take a big hacksaw to a lot of its sellers within the platform. But yeah, as Jamie said, it's still double-digit growth in terms of its overall revenue. So it's not necessarily this disaster story that's been painted by some analysts.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. And back to you, Jamie. How significant is sustained growth for Amazon's advertising business, do you think?
Yeah, I think, and just to build on Matt's point around kind of the ad competition and what have you there, I think with Temu, they're, I think, what is it, 4 billion to 9 billion in the first quarter of 24. So it's over 100% year-on-year growth. And there was quite substantial losses within that. And at least anecdotally, I feel like I see Temu ads 1,000 times more regularly than I see Amazon ads at the moment. And I think there is a bit of a game of chicken going on in both of their sort of respective ad businesses. I think that's going to be a bigger margin erosion fear from the way I see it than necessarily a top line one. I think Amazon have incredible retention and very lengthy lifetime value within their customers. It's very sticky. Whereas the sort of acquisition of new users is the area that I think they're going to really struggle with when Temu is so happy to be sort of churning cash on a big scale. Again, it's important to remember this is many billions of pounds worth of revenue. So it's you've got to correlate that to what you think their acquisition costs are, which I would suspect are very, very high. So I think it's a dangerous game for Amazon to get overly involved with. And I wonder if they are switching strategies to how they can sort of get more juice out of the fruits that they already have, if you like, as opposed to being as aggressive as they might have otherwise been on new customers, really.
Yeah. Yeah, they might be doing that. Okay. So now switching to our third story, looking at Snapchat now. So the platform has gained $1.24 billion in revenue for Q2, and it also added 10 million daily active users in the period, taking the total figure to 432 million. So in comparison, X currently has 250 million daily active users. And global time spent watching content in the app grew by 25% year over year, while its subscription offering added 11 million subscribers, rising from 9 million in April. So I'll come to you first, Matt, on this one. Are Snapchat subscription growth figures surprising, do you think, or not?
It's not surprising in the sense that Snap is spending an awful lot of money to attract users, but you know, reading through their earnings releases for the past few quarters, they're still going with such a big scattergun approach, which if you have a positive mindset on, it's, you know, they're actively trying to bring the company to profitability, and the fact its net loss has shrunk in the last quarter is a positive sign on that. But also, you know, you've also got to think it could potentially harm its identity if it keeps bombarding users with new features, some of which may get, you know, obviously very expensive to produce, but not actually many users see them. Clearly, some of those features are attracting subscribers, and 22% quarter-on-quarter growth is impressive. But I think retaining those users is so important. How sticky are those subscribers, or are they just subscribing for a month or two to play with the latest new features, latest new filters you can put on your videos or photos, or how many of them are actually, you know, testing that and then leaving it be? And also, you still got to remember that less than 1.3% of its monthly active users are subscribers, so it still represents a very small portion for them. So obviously, you know, increasing that advertiser spend, increasing that advertiser growth, that's probably still where Snap's priorities should lie.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like you said, retaining the users they already have definitely is the most important thing, I would say. What do you think, Jamie?
I have to say I was slightly surprised. I think to Matt's point, it's no shock that they're throwing a lot of money at the problem, if you like, and they are expert at burning through cash. So I suppose the optimist within me would say that they are focusing hugely on AR and AI, to the extent they've even got a sort of an offshoot company just working on AR, and there aren't a huge amount of very profitable AI companies in the world right now, and it feels like a lot of them are building for the future, which I suppose, yeah, that would be kind of devil's advocate position. But I struggle to see how they commercialize these people, like Matt said, around the premium users, but also from an advertising standpoint. I think people think of Snap as a more sort of authentic messaging, content sharing experience than the likes of Instagram. And I think the influencer usage is a really interesting metric of that, where it's very nearly 100% of influencers use Instagram, about a fifth use Snapchat. And I think that's quite an interesting barometer as to how willing or how sort of expectant people are to be able to commercialize Snap as a channel for them.
Yeah, it's true. It's quite a different platform to other social medias like Instagram, like you said, for example. Yeah. And now back to you, Matt. What are the pros and cons of advertising on Snapchat for brands?
So I think one of the pros to it is that it does have that scale, and compared to X/Twitter, which, you know, is just a absolute bonfire at the moment of anti-Semitic, racist and disinformation content. And, you know, obviously we've had a lawsuit launched by X against the WFA, GARM, and some of its member advertisers, which is one of the most stupid business decisions ever made, and is based purely on a US House Republican straw-clutching, you know, report. And it's basically whining that right-wing media out that's known to repeatedly publish hateful and misleading content aren't being funded, which, you know, tough shit, I would say. Snap also has a predominantly younger audience, and I think that's something that, you know, obviously attracts advertisers towards the likes of TikTok and Roblox as well. That's getting a lot of interest in terms of its quite fledgling ads business, but it's still not necessarily discussed as prominently with Snap, maybe to Jamie's point, in terms of having that more authentic discussion and, you know, not bringing those influencers to the point that they should have at this stage. That could be feeding into it. Year over year, active advertisers are doubling over year. But that's predominantly in markets outside of North America and Europe, which on the one hand, that's great. They're diversifying their audience base, but the CPMs are a little lower. I would say expect Snap to make some gains as advertisers move away from X. But yeah, it's probably not going to be to the extent that it needs in order to be able to gain that profitability, given how much it's spending at the moment. Whether we'll see a correction in terms of that spend in the next year or so, we'll see. But yeah, it's burning through a lot of cash at the moment.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, what do you think, Jamie?
Yeah, I think my view on Snap is just that it's unbelievably brand sensitive or media buyer sensitive to an extent that is probably not comparable to any other of the big channels. I think huge Gen Z bias, huge APAC bias as well. So I think there's good sort of penetration in the US, and millennials is not a meaningless amount of sort of its audience members. So I think there could be arguments made that, you know, it's a sort of high earner, not rich yet type market where people start doing some more brand building for, you know, when they've got a bit more buying power later in life. And I think that it could be an awareness play that that they look at. I think on the pro side, in a general sense, though, I think the sort of placements they have on offer are pretty strong. They've got lots of different things from video to carousels, which are all fairly standard, but then quite a lot of AR formats and things like this, which is relatively unique. And I would expect that given the sort of growing usership that people will start to do more of their sort of buying on Snap. I think safety and quality concerns are obvious with Snap. And I think a Kylie Jenner tweet sent their entire stock price into freefall a few years ago, which is never necessarily what you want where you're putting a lot of your ad spend. But I think at the same time, who doesn't have some of those safety and quality concerns in the sort of social media scape? So, yeah, I think it's an interesting one. And if you did have a very sort of Gen Z minded brand, it would be worth a shot, really.
Yeah, the safety and quality concerns are a bit unavoidable, I guess. Yeah, I think that's a good note to end today's discussion. Thanks so much for joining us, Jamie.
More than welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And thanks as always, Matt, for joining us.
Yep, great to be here as ever.
Okay, and thanks to all our listeners. We'll